Hello, friends, and welcome back to the Liz Moody Podcast. I'm your host, Liz Moody, and I'm a best-selling author and longtime journalist. This podcast is all about helping you live your healthiest, happiest life, whether we're learning how to identify and deal with narcissists, discussing what daily habits we can incorporate for more energy and less inflammation, or uncovering the hidden elements of happiness that nobody talks about. And yes, those are all real episodes, and they are linked in the show notes if you want to listen. Today's episode is the start of a brand new series, so exciting, called Life Lessons, where I invite on amazing guests, and then we get to dive into the specific lessons they've gathered from their life experiences that we can all take on and learn and grow from. And I am so excited to kick it off with none other than Monica Padman. Monica is an actor, producer, writer, and host of the mega popular podcast Armchair Expert, as well as multiple other shows under the Armchair umbrella like Armchair Anonymous and Synced. On Armchair Expert, Monica and Dax Shepard interview experts, artists, guests from all walks of life to dive deep, get really vulnerable, and explore humanity in essence. She is so smart, so fun, so open, and so honest, and she spent the last number of years collecting life lessons from the world's greatest minds, so I thought that she would be the perfect person to kick off this series with. We get into how to know when to say no and when to say yes to opportunities, how to build deep family-like community with your friends, the secret to being less judgmental and more open to people with differing opinions from you, the best advice for learning how to be satisfied with your life exactly the way that it is, no changes necessary, what boundaries really are and how to set them for yourself, behind the scenes secrets of building one of the world's biggest podcasts and lessons learned along the way, life lessons about the world of celebrity, and so much more. This episode is so much fun. It's like a really great chat with a friend who you just know will always have interesting thoughts and beautiful wisdom to share. We definitely want to know what is resonating, and I want to know if you like this new series format, so please share and tag us on Instagram. I am at Liz Moody, and Monica is at ML Padman. Okay, let's get right into some life lessons with Monica Padman. Monica, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks for having me.
I'm so excited to have you here. As I was explaining before we started recording, we're going to do like a life lessons theme here. So I have prompts, I have questions, but take it wherever you want to take it. Okay. So we're going to start off with a big theme in your life seems to be saying yes to opportunities that present themselves and noticing when those opportunities present themselves. So I'm curious, how do you spot the opportunities and how do you know when to say yes to them?
Gosh, I feel like a hypocrite when you say that because I feel like now I'm in my say no era.
Okay.
But you're right. You're right. I do think for a huge part of my life, there was a lot of say yes to what's in front of you and then you can figure it out later kind of, which I do definitely believe in, especially when you're trying to get yourself up and going. I love the phrase, love the thing that loves you back, as opposed to like resisting. You know, it's like this thing is here right now for you. You might as well take it. And then you're not stuck in anything. So I love that in general. But once you say yes a lot, you then have a lot on your plate. And so now I'm in my like know when to say yes and know when to say no.
So how do you know? What are the life lessons there?
I guess, well, we can behind the curtain this, right? Can we?
Yeah.
So we were supposed to record earlier this week and I had to cancel last minute, which is so annoying. Like I hate doing that. I hate letting people down. I talked about this actually on one of our fact checks. So I was like, oh, it's so hard to let people down. But at this point, you have to decide what is possible for you and what is impossible. And sometimes it comes with a little bit of like people not being 100% happy with you and understanding that that's okay and that's part of life and you do have to prioritize yourself and whatever is prioritized in your life. Like you have to have that list, you know?
It's just hard in practice to figure out what those things should be. Like, who should I let down? And I love the phrase, let yourself down last. But in practice, that's also really hard. And you're like, well, am I being selfish? Am I
totally
not keeping my commitments? It's really hard to navigate when you're sitting there and you're like, should I cancel on my friends for dinner tonight? Should I cancel on this interview? Whatever, you know?
Yeah. No, I know. And I think knowing that it's never going to feel good.
Yeah.
is helpful. Like, it's not going to happen. And then you're going to be like, I'm really glad I did that. It's still going to hurt a little bit. And you're going to feel like, oh, no. But we can't do everything.
Yeah.
And it's a hard lesson, I think, to learn. Unfortunately, I don't think I have the answer of exactly when to say no or exactly when to say yes. I think you just have to monitor your plate. I am good at knowing emotionally when I'm starting to get totally unregulated. And that often has to do with like the amount of stuff on my plate or like chaos. And I can feel it in my body. And so I have to tell myself I need to pare back a tiny bit so I can manage this.
Well, it's an interesting point about saying yes and saying no is that at any time you're saying yes or no, you're also saying yes or no to yourself. So if you're saying yes or no to somebody else, like at that moment, are you saying yes or no to yourself? So it sounds like
that's true.
You've still said yes, but you've been saying yes to yourself the whole time. And yes to yourself earlier in your career looked like saying yes to the opportunities in front of you. And yes to yourself later in your career looks like saying no to more things and being more discerning with your time.
Yeah, I like that spin on it. Yes, that's right. Yeah.
Can you talk to me about some of those yeses earlier in your career and being able to spot those opportunities and knowing that that was a shift that you should make in those moments?
So when I started working with Kristen and Dax, I was nannying for them. And I was just date night babysitting for them at first. And then they asked me to come on full time when they had their second. And I was like, I don't know. I had fully written off nannying. I had done it. And I loved all these kids I was nannying for so much. But I did feel like 2 hours was 400 hours when I was nannying. I was just like staring at the time just drip by. It was hard for me.
I've never nannied. Do you like come up with activities?
Yeah,
like,
you okay. have to.
Because you have to like entertain them yes. the whole time, right?
Yes, but you'd be shocked at how little time going to the library takes. Like you want it to take.
I feel like all the parents out there are like, I would not be shocked, in fact.
Exactly. But yeah, I would stack up these activities to make the time go. And it was hard for me. And then I started working at SoulCycle because I was like, big pivot. I can't do that anymore. And all these jobs were jobs specifically so that I could audition. And so then I started working at SoulCycle, and then I just randomly started date night babysitting for them. And then they asked me to come on full time. Already, I had declared I wasn't doing that anymore. And I was worried that I wouldn't have time to audition, but I just had like a gut feeling about them. I loved Lincoln, who was already there at the time. And I was like, we're going to try it. And like, if it doesn't work out, doesn't work out. And I did make sure to tell them like, I need to audition and make sure that's okay. And they said, of course. So that was a time I said yes when I was struggling a little bit.
Yeah.
And thank God I did. It really ended up paying dividends, which was great.
Was there a yes when Armchair Expert came about? Or
yeah, that one's so organic. It really did kind of fall into our laps in the sense of we had no expectation and we really were just doing it for fun. So yes, and Dax had been on a couple podcasts before. He came and said, I really like doing that. That's so fun. They're long form conversations. You can really deep dive. And he said, I think I might want to do one. And I said, so I guess this is yes. I was like, I can figure out how to do that. I can learn how to do that. And so I met with some people I knew who had podcasts and we went from there. So in some ways, yes, I think this is adjacent to saying yes, but I think I do look for opportunity a lot. And I just take it. Like I say, I can figure that out. Then I just go figure it out. Or when I was working for Kristen, she'd have to write like 10 of your favorite foods and why for this article. She had so many of those to do. And at one point I said, do you want me to do that? I can do that. I know what your 10 favorite foods are. And she was like, you do that? And I say, yeah. So I just sort of just take it on. And then if it's good, it sticks.
Have you had to overcome any sense of imposter syndrome with, I'm now a podcast producer, I'm now a really successful podcast host, all of these things, I'm writing Kristen's articles or interviews or things like that? How do you deal with that?
I do have imposter syndrome for sure still in podcast producing, or even that we're sort of a staple in the podcast space. It still feels crazy. we did just start doing it randomly, and it's grown so much. We've grown so much, but also the space has grown so much. So yeah, it always feels a little like, we just sort of tripped into it and now we're being asked questions about it.
But I don't think you tripped into it too. Like, even if the decision to do it was casual, you guys have something that's really special, and that's what has made you so successful. Are you able to
hear
see
that?
That at this point? Hear that? Yeah.
Yes. I do know that what we've made and what we do is, it's special to me. I'll say that. It still feels incredibly lucky every time we record. We say it so much, like really, we say it multiple times a week when a guest leaves. We're like, this is our job. Like, that's so fun. And yes, there's so many in the space. I've been on multiple ones and I have other ones going on too. So I do know that what Dax and I built and the sort of the chemistry that happens in that space when we're in it is unique, and I'm grateful for that. I think that's lucky. I mean, there are things I do think we do on purpose that help elevate the show and bring
like
something
what?
Extra.
Like, what's your secret sauce?
Well, I think our ability to speak openly about pretty much everything, him and I do that, which really allows the guests to meet us there. We are sort of no holds barred. We say everything on there.
Is there anything that would be off limits topic-wise for you
the
or for him?
The only thing for him that is sometimes off limits, of course, we talk about his family a ton, but he's a public person in his own right, and so is Kristen, obviously. So if it could be potentially a headline for her, we think twice about that.
Yeah.
Because it's not fair. She wasn't even involved.
Yeah.
But that's kind of it. Like, for the most part, other than that, we are talking about everything. And we sort of forget that people listen. You know, we're in this tiny space. And, you know, here today we're in this cool studio. But him and I still record in his garage attic.
Yeah.
It's very lo-fi and low-key, and it feels that way. Now that we're talking about it, I think that's something we also bring. When people come in, a lot of people have said, oh, it feels so cozy in here. And now we have all this, like, crazy stuff on the walls that we've just accumulated. There's a big oil painting of me as a little baby that Rob had made. Just, like, silliness. And I think that helps. So there are things we definitely did and do. But you can't manufacture chemistry. I think that's luck, and we're aware of that.
Has your relationship with Dax and Kristen changed as you've gone from being their nanny to being this really successful person in your own right?
Yeah. To their credit, I mean, tons of credit to Dax, but mainly to Kristen's credit, because I started with her. And then I abandoned her, basically, when that was not the intention. When we first started the podcast, I had no idea where it would go. So I had every intention of just doing both. Because at that point, I was doing a lot with her. I was producing a lot of stuff for her, writing a bunch of stuff. We were partners in essence. But once it really started taking off and was much more time consuming than I anticipated, eventually I had to let that piece go. And she handled it super well. And that is not easy to do, especially when we're all friends and it's all intermingled. So I give her a ton of credit of she wanted me to thrive and not just be like her person, which is really special and nice. So yeah, we've gone through all kinds of iterations over the years, but they're my family, which is so lovely.
Yeah, I was thinking about that when you've talked about like your dating journey and stuff.
Yeah.
And I was wondering if it almost takes the pressure off of the dating that you have almost a
people.
Communal environment. You don't live with them.
No.
But they are family. And it feels like you have a wider group of friends where that's true with too. Is that true?
Yes. We have this big pod. We call ourselves the pod. We started calling ourselves that over COVID. But yeah, there's a group of five families, basically. And we do spend so much time together. It is this like very amazing village that we've curated. So yes, in a way, it can complicate dating complicate, I say, because I'm very fulfilled. I have a ton of social connection. There's always someone there if I need someone or emotionally anything. Like, there are people. And I don't hesitate. Like, we're all texting each other all the time. If we need something, we've all been through a lot together. So in that way, yes, because I don't feel that I'm lacking. I was actually just talking to my therapist about this the other day. I was dating a little bit in December, and then I'm not dating those people anymore. And so my therapist was like, is there anyone new, like, on the dating front? And I just said, no, I'm not even really thinking about it. And she was like, okay. She's like, well, of course, that's fine. But just remember on your birthday when you say, oh, God, like, it's like days like that, like my birthday or New Year's Eve or big days of reflection where I start to think, oh, but I need a partner in this life. And so she was reminding me of that. And then I said, I know I'm currently having a hard time knowing what's my real feeling on it. Is it the day of my birthday or is it today? Mm. Is it most days in my life or is it on those critical days? I don't know the answer.
I do think we're more open societally than ever to, like, there are so many ways to have really deep, intimate relationships and build these beautiful lives. It's not just this, like, one path of, yeah, boy meets girl and has two kids and lives in a cute little home.
Yes.
And I do think that is beautiful. Have you read the book, The Other Significant Others?
No, I should.
It's about all of the different types of really intimate, beautiful relationships that we form in our lives and, like, how we need to maybe broaden the narrative around what true love even looks like.
Yeah.
And I was just wondering the impact, because it feels like you have, like, true love with Dax and Kristen when you talk about them.
Yeah, and their kids. I love them so much. I'm building a house in the neighborhood, and it's this joke that the kids are going to live with me when the house is done. So yes, there's so much love there. There's so much love with the wider friend group. And yeah, I definitely feel that. And it makes it harder. It makes it much harder for me to force myself to go on dates with people who I don't necessarily want to, or it's harder to be uncomfortable, which that's also on me. Like, I'm trying to really push myself to do that more because I do think that's the only way to yield any results. And someone did say to me, and this has stuck, she's my age, she's also single, and she was saying the same thing. She said, yeah, my life's really full. I have so much fun. I like not having to compromise every day. But I think about when I'm 60, and then will I feel like this, or will I want someone next to me on the couch? And I heard that. I was like, oh, yeah. I'm never thinking about so far down the road. I'm only thinking about now.
What is your dating status at the moment?
Single currently. I was dating a little bit in a couple months ago, and it was fun. Like, it's fun. I don't enjoy it unless I really enjoy the person.
I think that's fair.
I think it's fair too, but some people
just love the process.
They do. They love it, and they love meeting strangers, and they love, like, you know, a lot of people say, you get a free dinner, you get
but
a free drink.
But your job is also kind of meeting strangers and talking to them for the length of a dinner. So I wonder if you're satisfied in that way.
Yeah, I think that's right. There's a lot of talking in my life. So to add it in, it needs to be, like, worth it.
Were there any life lessons that you've learned by being so public about your dating journey or just over the course of your dating journey until now?
The only real lesson in that space is, I mean, the internet is full of judgment, don't get me wrong, but there's a lot of solidarity too. When I've talked about my whole journey, so many people reach out with, me too, and I'm so glad you shared that because I'm the same and I thought it was weird. And so there's a lot of that. So the life lesson for me is it's good to share. It makes people feel better. It also makes you feel better, even if people are like, whoa, that's weird. Just saying stuff out loud that you've been, like, holding as a secret, it just, like, releases its power.
Mm.
Yeah, the lesson in that is do it.
If you're looking for an incredibly bioavailable multivitamin that covers all of your nutritional bases, look no further than AG1. It is just one scoop mixed in water and bam, you've got your essential brain, gut, and immune health support. I think it tastes so delicious too. It's like tropical vanilla and I crave it, especially because I associate the flavor with feeling so good. It makes me feel energized and focused without any kind of caffeine jitters, which you all know is so, so important to me. I discovered AG1 after a ton of research because I was looking for one small, simple thing I could incorporate into my day that would support my entire body. Of course, we're always trying to eat our fruits and vegetables and balanced meals over here, but nobody is perfect. So AG1 helps support me with 75 vitamins, minerals, whole food source, superfoods, and adaptogens. I have partnered with AG1 for so long because they make such a high quality product that I genuinely look forward to using. And AG1 is rigorously third-party tested, which you know I always look out for. It also has less than 1 gram of sugar, no GMOs, and no artificial anything. So if you want to take ownership of your health, start with AG1. Try AG1 and get a free 1-year supply of vitamin D3 plus K2 and 5 free AG1 travel packs with your first purchase at drinkag1.com/Liz Moody. That's drinkag1.com/Liz Moody. Check it out. You have heard me talk about red light therapy's skin and hair care benefits in past episodes with Dr. Whitney Bow and Bridget Hill and how it can help reduce the appearance of stretch marks, fine lines, age spots, and skin texture, and it can help hair grow. But red light therapy can have positive effects on your whole body, which Dr. Shah just recently told us about, including improving your sleep and with muscle recovery after workouts and so many other amazing benefits, which is why I love using Bond Charge's Max Red Light Therapy device. First of all, it comes with protective eye goggles, which is so, so important. One of the reasons that I love using a panel is because your eyes aren't millimeters away from the lights. You can sit a little further back and wear the goggles to make sure that your eyes are protected from light exposure. And because red light has all of those many, many, many benefits, it is a no-brainer to me to get a panel versus a mask because you can get those benefits on your whole body, including deep healing and energy versus just helping the skin on your face. You only need to do a 10 to 20 minute session each day to see results, and you can set the device up anywhere. We have ours in our bedroom, and this might be TMI, but we meditate naked in front of it to get as much red light as possible while we habit stack. So that's what we do, but you do you. Order the Bond Charge Max Red Light Therapy device today. You will love the full body benefits. Bond Charge products are all also HSA, FSA eligible, giving you tax-free savings of up to 40%. And for a limited time on top of that, my listeners get 15% off when you order from bondcharge.com and use my exclusive promo code LizMoody at checkout. That is bondcharge.com. You will also get free shipping and a 12-month warranty. Go now to get this exclusive offer. That is bondcharge.com with promo code LizMoody to get 15% off.
Can you give us some like behind the scenes insight into the process of the show? Like, how are you picking the guests? How much prep are you doing? Are you and Dax sitting down beforehand and saying like, oh, I want to make sure we hit on these topics?
Yeah. So the prep is, at this point, we have a booking email. So people will send their pitches to that email, or if they send them to me, I forward them there. Our assistant, Emma, amazing. She puts them in a list and sends them to Dax and I. And then we go through and say, yes, no, yes, no. And there are a million reasons why. And then she schedules them. And once they're on the schedule, Dax does all his research. He does research for the guests fully. Every now and then, I'll have my own questions and my own things I want to bring in. Like, I don't watch the movies. I don't read the books unless I already have. Like, sometimes it just happens, but it's best for the show if I don't, because it can get very esoteric if I'm also in And if I'm not, I can see it from the audience's perspective. Like, we did a Fargo week, which was super, super fun. And we had three guests that week. And the first interview, I had not seen the show. And then the second two, I had. And it was so much harder for me to edit those ones I knew too much, you know?
Because you need to assume the audience has not watched the show. Yeah.
And often that's the case. Like, we get things ahead of time.
Yeah.
So I actively don't, so I can play the part of the audience. And that in general is what I like to do, is be the audience and know this is confusing. Ask for clarity when there's confusion. Bring a different perspective. Obviously, Dax and I have very different perspectives in life. We're so different. So if I think like one thing's getting nailed on the head and there needs to be another opinion on this, I'll throw that in. So yeah, I'm just like balancing that out.
So when a guest is coming on, though, has Dax basically decided the direction the conversation is going to go?
For the most part, he has papers. He does all his research. Often the papers get thrown out or nothing gets looked at because we're just following the air of the conversation. But he normally has an idea of where he wants to take it or his overall thought of what he wants to say about the person or learn about the person.
Have you learned any life lessons that you really take with you over the course of producing the show? Less about like, here's how you do a podcast, but like, here's what I've learned about myself. Here's what I've learned about the world.
Well, definitely what I've learned about myself is I have such a hard time giving out things that I think I should be doing. And as far as the world, I have learned a ton just from the show in general, which is that most people have something positive to offer. Even when we have people on who I kind of like, why are we having this person on? Like, I don't care about this person at all. Or, you know, I've heard this person isn't great. They are. Like, everyone is a real person, and we, for the most part, get to see a human side of them. And I always even think people are lovely. Like, people are lovely and complicated. We all are. And it has definitely changed my worldview as far as judgment. I have far less of it. In fact, I feel like now I'm in a new space that I'm trying to dismantle a little bit, where I'm like very judgmental of people who are very judgmental. And that's all
the
same thing.
But they haven't gotten the opportunities that you've gotten to dismantle their own judgment.
Yeah. But right now it feels so extra toxic.
Yeah.
And I find it very scary that on the internet, we had a whole conversation about this on Synced, but the whole Kate Middleton thing, I could not believe.
So I was offline for that. I went to this thing called Hoffman where they like take away your phone, they take away your computer, all of these things. So I went in and the whole internet was like, is she having an affair? Is he having an affair? Like treating it so gossipy.
Is she dead?
Is she, yeah, all these things. And then I get my phone back and the first thing I see is like Kate Middleton has cancer.
I know.
And I've done this whole like therapy week of like compassion and like seeing the good in people. And I was like, how gross that that was the last thing I saw and that she has cancer. Like, it made me so sad for humanity.
Exactly. Yeah. I was so struck by that, by the fun and the fervor that people placed on her. And for me, the thing is, like, they said she's recovering from a surgery. Then to take that to like all these different conspiracy theories, she's a person. And I do think we forget that. And it's easy to forget it. The media makes us forget it. Celebrity culture, it's very complex. And I understand why it happens, but it really scares me.
How has your view of celebrity culture changed? Sitting down, first, you have really deep, intimate relationships with hugely famous people.
Yes.
Second, you sit down with hugely famous people every single week and hear their intimate stories, see them as real people. And then third, you've become a celebrity yourself. So I'm curious how all of those things have impacted your view of how we see celebrity on a cultural level.
Well, definitely for my friends who are celebrities and then the people who come in, I do feel very protective over them now in a way that I never would have before. They're my friends. Like, they're my people, just like anyone who would be upset when someone came after their friends. That's how I feel. And I understand why they don't, but I wish people could see celebrities as if What if that was your friend and everyone was doing this or attacking them or saying they're not relevant to anyone? Like, it hurts. It hurts you as a friend. So I definitely see celebrities so differently now, especially actors and musicians. Fame is a byproduct of the thing they do. It's not what they do. And it's, for most people, something they have to overcome and deal with. It's not something they're excited about. They can't say that because that sounds like ungrateful or something, but I can say that on seeing the reaction to them. It's not natural.
That's interesting. What do you think about the argument, like, they're getting paid so much and that's part of the job, and if they wanted to be an actor, musician, they could be, like, playing in their local pub in Kansas or, like, on community theater?
I understand. Like, again, I understand the train of thinking. We all want to be as successful as – maybe not we all, but a lot of us want to be as successful as we can doing the thing we like, right? Like, that's – what you're told as a kid. You can do anything. If you can love what you do for a job, you've hit the lottery. So I understand that argument. I think if you really asked most people, would you want to be successful at the thing that you enjoy doing, they'd say yes.
Yeah. Yeah, it's true. And I also think there's a lot of mind fucks, for lack of a better word, about even, like, I'm not as recognized as, like, Dax or Kristen would be. But I've had to deal with my own self-worth issues the more that I'm lauded for things that people don't even know who I am as a human being. Right. And then I'm like, oh, that is chipping away at my sense of having worth without those things. And I think that on a celebrity level, it's 20-fold, you know?
Yeah, it's so complicated.
Yeah, it really is. It's interesting. Okay, back to the community thing. Life lessons about building a really strong community like that and having those friends that feel like family. Help us.
I know. I want to. I have to say, I think that's like the gift of my life for always. Like, in college and in high school, I have a group of friends from that period of time. We're still all very close. We're spread out across the country, but we're still close. I've been blessed with the most deep, incredible friendships my whole life. I do think it started from probably not a very good place, where I was desperate for friendships to validate me when I was young. So I think I learned from a very early age what people needed and wanted out of me. And then I've adjusted to be that, like, be everyone's friend. Now I don't do that anymore, obviously, but I have had just the insane privilege of these crazy friendships in college as well. It's just gone across the board. I think it's just luck. Like, I don't
think so. Even what you just said, it's been a theme of my life. I think that something doesn't happen consistently via luck. I think something can happen one-off luck.
Well, I suppose I prioritized it. Maybe that's the answer, from an early age and then continued on. And I still do. Even now, if I haven't seen my girlfriends, like, we're all hanging out on Friday because I was like, I haven't seen them in a week and a half. We have to see each other. And it's easy the older you get, especially when people have families. It is so easy to go months and months and months and never see your people. So it does require reach out, dealing with annoying schedules. Maybe it's not going to be as easy as it used to be, but it's still worth it. Putting in the time is the key.
What about maintaining the friendships as they have families and you don't?
You could be stubborn and say, they aren't reaching out to me, so I'm not going to reach out to them. But that's only going to cost you, you know? I think knowing their lives are different than yours, and not that they're more important or anything like that. It's just kids. And maybe it's also because I am around so many. Mm. I have a lot of knowledge about what they require and take and give. But I know it's hard. I really do. And figuring out who's going to watch the kid while we go get wine often is not worth it. And I get that. So for me, thinking like, oh, well, I'll just go to them, make it easier. It doesn't feel like a sacrifice. It feels like everyone's doing their best here to make it work so that we're all together. And at this stage in life, maybe I'll go to you, but in another stage, it might be reversed.
Do you have any current thoughts on whether or not you want kids? I know you froze your eggs.
I did. I froze them twice. I still don't know. And during the process, both times, there's so many fluctuations of, okay, I do want them. And then 4 days later, I don't think I want, you know, it's so up and down. So I still don't know. I don't know. The reason I do is because I do know that it is a love. Do you have kids?
No, I have cat.
Okay, you have cat.
And it is a love unlike any other love.
Yes. It's a love. I do know, unlike any other love, that I do feel would be something I would miss in this life, right? It's special and it's unique and you can't get it any other way. So in that way, I do, but practically, they're a lot. They're a lot. And there's a lot of times I leave a party and feel grateful that I'm leaving a party by myself.
Yeah.
And that sounds bad, I think, maybe, but it's the truth. And sometimes I leave a party and I think, I'm so sad I don't have that. It goes both ways.
Yeah. I feel like you're really good at accepting what is in your life. You don't feel like you have a sense of longing for a life that isn't yours in a way that I think a lot of people do.
That's a nice compliment. I think that's right. Someone did give me really good advice when I was first moving to LA. And I, you know, had no money. I moved out with my friend Anthony. We went to college together. And so I already had this buddy. I was here to act. It was such a grind and it's so demoralizing. It's a lot. And it can become all consuming every day. Like, I still don't have this. I still don't have this. I still don't have this. And someone told me to make sure to fill out the rest of my life. At the end of the day, that piece is still work. Like, that's the work zone, even though it's your passion and you love it and it's still a small part of your life and you need to make sure to fill out the rest, like your friendships and fun. So I did that, I think. And so from very early on, when I look back, it makes me smile so big, all of the periods leading up to this. And I think it does have to do with who I surrounded myself with at the time. It can make or break your life, who's around you and what you're doing. We were joking earlier about getting a massage, and I was like, I'm busy, but I make time for that. Like, you make time for the things, not a massage necessarily, but for things that,
that fill you up. Yeah.
Yeah, you have to. Even if you have $4, like, go to the park and bring a book and, like, bring a friend.
Well, and it's so important because it means then you're not waiting for something to happen in your life for your life to begin or your life to feel satisfying. You seem like you have always found a way to be like, this is my life right now. I'm going to make it as satisfying as it can possibly be.
Yes.
And that's really cool.
Thank you.
Life lessons from therapy.
Oh my God.
What are some that have really stuck with you and like changed the way you approach each day?
The one that pops up is my therapist redefined boundaries for me. Because I used to think it was like, you can't treat me that way. You know, like, you can't do that. I won't let you do that. You can't do that to me. And she said, boundaries aren't, you can't do that. It's, I won't do that. So it's not, you can't talk to me that way. It's, I won't be spoken to like that. I'm going to leave. And not like, you better leave. You can't make anyone do anything. So it totally reframed that, oh, it's on me. Like, everything's on you because you just can't assume anyone's going to make any changes and they won't. Like, you have to take that on yourself. And it's much harder, right? It's harder to say, I'm uncomfortable. I'm leaving a situation. Not, you're making me uncomfortable. You need to stop. That's 100%. Easy to do.
Yeah.
But leaving is harder, but it is empowering the more you do it.
Have you done it in practice?
I have. We were just talking about this on Synced. Liz was like, it's one of the things I admire about you is your ability to walk away. And I have practiced a lot of just walking away from a situation that I know is going to escalate or I know isn't good for me. I have 2 feet. I can leave the room. So that was pretty early on in my therapy. And it like changed my life. But my therapist is a genius. I got so lucky with her. And she gives me nuggets like all the time. But that was a big one.
What would you say your mental health struggles are at the moment?
Well, it's kind of funny you bring that up because I'm keeping sort of an eye on my mental health currently. I'm on antidepressants. I've been on them since 2020. I have major spells of anxiety with full panic attacks and like disassociation, but it's been pretty even for a long time. I have recently, like in the past couple weeks, been thinking I need to keep a little bit of an eye on it. I feel like I might be dipping a teeny bit, not severely, but just like a little bit lower than my norm as far as just overwhelm, I think. But when I get so overwhelmed, I hit a point where I just then don't care about anything anymore. And that's when it is problematic.
What do you do?
Exercise, huge. Taking stuff off my plate, huge. Recharging, like again, the saying no. Like on Sunday, I was supposed to go to an Easter thing, and it was all my friends. Like I wanted to do it, but I woke up and I thought, I can't go. I just need to be today. And knowing that's okay, and you'll see them on Friday when you have wine or whatever, you'll figure it out. But recharging is like a new word to me. I've never really thought about that or really thought that that's something I needed, but I think I do. So I think that helps. And talking about it helps. Therapy helps so much. And time, like knowing things are temporary. And I can tell this isn't like something I need to talk to my psychiatrist about. In which case, if that were the case, I would. I would make an appointment and we would probably adjust medication or something. I have like zero problems with taking medication to help your mental state. In fact, it helped me so much. And I know so many people who it's helped. And I get kind of frustrated when people, they refuse.
Yeah.
Just try. Like, what is it going to hurt?
Taking Seed's DSO1 Daily Symbiotic is a part of my daily routine that supports my whole body health. I think it's critical to understand that when we think of probiotics, it's not just for the gut health issues like bloating and constipation. They support the entire body. Seed's DSO1 Daily Symbiotic has 24 bacterial strains that are scientifically studied to support our digestion, our skin, our heart health, our immune system, and more. Their team of scientists formulated the DSO1 Daily Symbiotic as a capsule within a capsule that actually survives in the gut rather than being killed by stomach acid before you even get the benefits. The outer capsule is the prebiotic, which research is finding out more and more are so, so important. These are the foods the good bacteria need to eat to thrive. And then it protects the inner capsule, which contains the probiotics, so they can actually reach your gut. This is critical. With other products, you might not even be getting the microbiome support you're expecting due to a capsule that doesn't shield the bacteria. Seed's team is leading the research that other companies essentially develop products based on down the line. They are so, so committed to science and to evolving their products. So you're getting all of those benefits first. If you would like to try Seed's DSO1 Daily Symbiotic or their PDSO8 Pediatric Daily Symbiotic for kids and teens aged 3 to 17 and see for yourself why I and so many other people love it, I have an amazing discount for you. You can use code LizMoody at seed.com to get 25% off your first month supply. Again, that's LizMoody at seed.com for 25% off. Taking care of your health isn't always easy, but it should at least be simple. That's why for more than 5 years now, I've been drinking AG1. It's just one scoop mixed in water, and it makes me feel energized and focused without any kind of caffeine jitters. I discovered AG1 after a ton of research because I was looking for one simple habit I could incorporate into my day that would support my entire body and cover my nutritional bases. No matter what the rest of the day looks like, I know that I'm getting essential brain, gut, and immune health support. I just mix a scoop of AG1 into my water. I think it tastes delicious too, which I know people are always nervous about, but I think it's like a tropical vanilla flavor and I crave it, especially because I associate the flavor with feeling so good. Of course, we're always trying to eat our fruits and vegetables and balance meals over here, but nobody is perfect. So AG1 helps support me with 75 vitamins, minerals, whole food source superfoods, and adaptogens.
I especially love it for all of the travel I've been doing. I think it's a huge reason why I still feel so good and have avoided getting sick despite being on a plane a few times a week for so much of this year and having to eat out so often. AG1 is rigorously third-party tested, which you know I always look out for. It also has less than 1 gram of sugar, no GMOs, and no artificial anything. AG1 is one of the highest quality products to elevate your health, and that's why I've partnered with them for so long. So if you want to take ownership of your health, start with AG1. Try AG1 and get a free 1 year supply of vitamin D3 and K2 and 5 free AG1 travel packs with your first purchase exclusively at drinkag1.com/Liz Moody. That's drinkag1.com/Liz Moody. Check it out.
It's interesting that you went on medication in 2020 when from the outside, you're having this like meteoric rise to success. The podcast is doing so well. There's the pandemic. Is that what you would say was the thing? What sort of made you say right now, I want to do this?
Well, two things. At the beginning of 2020, I had a seizure and I got on seizure medication for that. And it is a side effect, but I don't think it actually was a side effect for me. I think I just was a bit depressed. And yeah, the pandemic, it happened. I got on antidepressants like a little bit into the pandemic. It wasn't like I had been like languishing around. And then,
yeah.
No, I mean, I think it's my chemistry. I think I maybe genetically can lean a little bit anxious and that can lead to depression. So yeah, I think that's a misnomer, right? That like your life is in order and so you shouldn't have depression. They're not
related.
Even remotely related. Yeah. It's like one thing's a full chemical imbalance and the other thing has nothing to do.
And sometimes even having your life in order can give you the space to realize you have something that's wrong.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of people we have on this show, that's a big topic, right? Yeah. Like when you're at the top of the mountain, you should feel the best and no one does.
Yeah. How has like being at the top of the mountain impacted how you feel about yourself and your life and all that? Like you're building a house, you're very financially successful now. How has that impacted you?
I mean, I wouldn't say I'm at the top of the mountain.
You're high up on the mountain.
But I'm happy with my place on the mountain, I will say. I'm very grateful for that. But yeah, just like anything, when you get acclimated to your surroundings, you get afraid of losing. There's this whole period of time where you're trying to achieve. And then you've done that. And then you move into, oh my gosh, I just can't lose any of this. And that's a new level of stress and fear of not like, I want that. It's I don't want to lose that.
Yeah.
So it has its own stressors, you know, but it's also so lucky. I can't believe it. Like, I really can't believe it when I drive by my house. It's bizarre.
Do you have any life lessons from building a house?
Oh my gosh. I am not the person to ask about that. I've done a terrible job. It's just renovating it. And I'm pretty much keeping the bones, but I'm doing a ton to it, which is why it's taking so long. But also there's a lot of reasons why it's taking so long. And part of that's my fault. Part of it's not. But yeah, I've been in this zone for quite a while. But you know what is also funny? I live in my apartment while that's happening. And sometimes I'm in the apartment and I panic about not being in that apartment anymore and knowing I'm going to be in this nice house, which is, again, this huge luxury, literal dream come true. When you move to LA, that's like, you know, a big marker. It's very hard to do, but I anticipate the day I move in, like people will be there, people will be helping, it'll be fun, and then everyone will leave and I'll be alone in this house and it's not gonna feel very good. It will feel fine in a couple days, I know that, but I'm picking out the stuff here and we're building it and I've seen it being built for so long and it's so exciting. And then when that's over and it's a different feeling, then I think there's a little bit of like, now what?
Yeah, well, I think that life in so many ways is us distracting ourselves from just being. Yes. And then in any moments where you are just being, you feel antsy a little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah. I feel antsy.
Yeah. Especially people like you're a extremely hard worker and you've built a whole thing. And that's like how your brain is trained to work is to like work and be working at something and working for something. And when that stops, it can be like, uh-oh.
Have there been any life lessons from the expert on expert guests that have stuck with you or changed the way that you actually like live your life on a daily or weekly or monthly basis?
Those are my favorite episodes. We learned so much. Dax and I did used to say before we started the podcast when we were just buddies debating that we wish we could just go back to school and like that could be our job and no test taking. So essentially that is what we've done. We brought all these professors to the attic and there's so many. One like very, very practical thing that is popping to mind is David Sedaris. We've had David Sedaris on a few times and he said that when he writes, if he has a line that he likes too much, he cuts it. If he's too precious about it, he's like, no, that means like I'm too in love with it. It's probably saccharine. It's got to go. And I really took that to heart because I do a lot of writing as well. And as a writer, do you write when you've like written a sentence and you think like, oh, wow, that's like spectacular. I think no one's ever written a sentence like that. It's so ego-based and it's probably not true and we're shadowed by it. So yeah, it's got to go. So I've been implementing that, which I think has helped my writing a lot.
Love that. Anything in the psychology or physical health or anything like that? You guys have just had such a range.
So many.
Anything from Vanessa?
Oh my God. Love. I just loved Vanessa so much. I mean, what
you're like,
thing,
I'm having great sex now. Thank you, Vanessa.
I mean, what most people said they took from it and I think is really interesting is like the way different people are aroused basically and that like some people need touch or foreplay first and then they get physically aroused whereas other people they get aroused and then they want to move forward. I just find that so interesting because we think we're all the same. And
which are you?
I think I could sort of fluctuate. Like there are definitely times where I just like am horny and it has nothing to do with like the person really.
Yeah.
But also, of course, I'll be very honest. I've never had sex with anyone I've been in love with. I've never been in a long, long-term relationship. So I don't know what it's like to have this like intimacy first and then how that would impact sex. I've never had it. I've never experienced it. So all the sex I've had is just in relation to dating, and that's different, right?
That's interesting. I wonder also if when you're like thinking when you're 65 or whatever and the conversations with your therapist about, well, how much do I want this? That is an element you don't get in this communal lifestyle thing.
The intimacy. The physical intimacy.
The physical
for sure.
Intimacy.
Yes.
In a way that is different than like, oh, I met a guy and
exactly.
We slept together tonight.
Exactly. That's really true.
Yeah.
That's really true.
Yeah.
I guess like, yeah, that's really important for me to think about. But then I'm like in my 60s, like, will we even?
Oh, yeah. To? Yeah.
That's
you can
great.
Have really hot sex like well through your life.
I guess Vanessa is helping people.
There was a show on HBO years ago that was like different people's sex lives. And the hottest sex in it was the oldest people.
Really?
Yeah. It made me really excited.
That's fun.
Also, because like think about it when you're like retired and
know,
you're
time.
All the time in the world.
Yeah. That's really true. No stress.
Yeah. I feel like it's a dream.
Yeah, that's true.
Anything else from like the mental or physical health perspective?
Gosh, we've learned so much. It's like all blurring together. But sort of what we were talking about earlier, like the importance of friendships. We've had a bunch of people on who've said it. People who don't have friendships, it's equivalent to smoking this amount of cigarettes a day, like the loneliness. That is big. You know, we had Robert Sapolsky on. He talked a lot about free will, which was really interesting to me and did make me look at things a bit differently. He has a book called Determined, and it's sort of a pitch for why we don't really have free will. On face value, I don't agree with that. I believe in free will. But when you hear his argument, which is basically like, we don't pick anything. We don't pick where we're born. We don't pick who our parents are. We don't pick the preschool we get put into. And then it just the further and further and further back you go, like a baby in utero, if the mother has had trauma, the trauma gets passed. And now what we're learning about the epigenome and all of these things, there's so much that we have no control over. And that is only important to know for two reasons. One, like, get off your high horse. You're not special, or like, you didn't earn this life. Or like, people who are just like, oh, I did this myself. Like, no, you didn't. Have some awareness of your privilege, really. And then also for punishment. He was saying it's not that people shouldn't be punished for bad behavior, but it's understanding the behavior and understanding why people make the mistakes they make. It's not just because, like, they decided to be bad. There's a million reasons why. And we can maybe have, like, justice reform around how we look at some of this and not be so draconian about the way we think about, like, bad people and good people, because it's just not real.
I love that. Can you share a life lesson with everybody listening that I feel like you are so good at for being more open to perspectives that differ from your own or people who feel really different from you?
I think it's just opening yourself up to forcing yourself, like, read a book on a topic you think you know everything about or you think you have a very strong opinion on, and read the opposing opinion. You don't have to change your opinion. And I think that's also an issue, right? Like, when we're in debates and stuff, the goal is to, like, convince the other person. It's not going to happen. Like, we're not convincing anyone of anything, really. But just allowing new information in is huge. And I just think it's because we've had so many different types of people on the show. I mean, this is – it's new. I do think I used to be, you know, maybe like 15 years ago, I would have – definitely been, there are good people and there are bad people. Life is way more black and white than I think now. I think it's not black and white at all anymore. But it's because we've talked to so many people with so many stories. And I think being so close to an addict, and there are other addicts in my life as well, who I'm very close with, that has changed my perspective like crazy. Because again, I think 15 years ago, I would have had an idea of what an addict was. And it would have been, you know, someone who just like sort of couldn't get their shit together.
Yeah.
Quite honestly. And now I know for certain that's not what it is. And in fact, like, many of them have their shit together way more than me, right? And because Dax is an addict, he does have a lot of compassion for people, and he definitely doesn't see the world as black and white. And that has rubbed off just being around him and hearing his perspective on things. We have a lot of addicts on the show. It is really helpful, and it gives a ton of gratitude, again, in the free will space. Like, you don't choose that.
I feel like you're almost saying that so often judgment is a lack of information, whether it's about a person's story, whether it's about a topic. And so the more you find yourself not being open to things, the more you should seek out information.
Yeah, I think that's fair. And just hearing different people's stories and backgrounds, because circling back to what we were saying at the beginning, everyone leaves our show and I think, oh, they're sweet, or they're nice, or this is so interesting about them. If you talk to people, even someone who you like really disagree with. Okay, I will say, maybe this is also learned. I grew up in Georgia and I love my friends and their families so much, but a lot of them have much different opinions than me and different opinions than my family.
Yeah.
And I couldn't just write them off. They were in my life. I loved them. They loved me. And I believed that, right? Like, I believe that they care about me. So then I can hear their opinion in a way that doesn't make me so defensive. So I do think, like, growing up in an environment where a lot of people had a different outlook than I did was helpful, because I couldn't just be like, everyone's bad, because they weren't.
And then you would have nobody left.
I would literally have nobody. Like, it's like when people are very black and white, I often think of them as privileged. I'm like, oh, you've just never had to be in the position where you've had to compromise or hear someone else out or engage with someone who you aren't on like 100% the same footing. And you're missing out.
Yeah. Okay, we're going to do a quick speed round.
Okay.
Life lessons from being obsessed with Matt Damon and then getting to meet him in real life and interview him.
Find your Matt Damon. You'll hug your Matt Damon in life. Like, you will.
Did he live up to expectations?
Oh my God, yeah. He was He's so wonderful. He's such a good person.
So it wasn't like a never meet your idol situation. No. It was like have your idol and someday maybe we'll get to
maybe
meet them.
Maybe you'll meet
them. Okay. A life lesson each from Dax and Kristen.
From Dax, sort of what I said already, but people are flawed and that's not a bad thing. It's a good thing. And Kristen is very good at giving credit and acknowledging when people are doing well or helping her. As a boss, she's so good at that. And it's huge. I think for anyone who's ever going to be a boss, acknowledging the people underneath them and giving them credit where credit is due is game changing for their performance.
Mm. Life lesson from your improv days.
What's the worst that could happen? Like, honestly, we've bombed. You'll bomb. It's – you live. You still live. And you laugh about it after. So, like, as far as – in any situation, if it goes horribly wrong, you'll wake up tomorrow and it'll be fine.
Life lesson about identity, especially being a first-generation American. And then you did your recent trip to India with Bill Gates.
I did. Yeah. I think it's okay to take your time, but I do think – it is worth exploration, like your identity and why we all do things in life and we don't even know why we're doing them. It's based in those roots and it's so complicated. And I do think it's worth it to like really investigate your past and how it is affecting your present and your future.
Mm. Okay. And then just end us on life lessons about knowing who your authentic self is and becoming and embracing that person.
I think the lesson there is to not get too stuck in who you are or your story or your narrative. This thing changes nonstop. Like you're ever evolving, you're changing. Like let that in. Allow yourself to evolve.
I love that. Do you want to talk in your own words about any of your millions of shows or shout out anything particular?
Yeah, we have 5 shows a week. We have Armchair Expert on Monday, Flightless Bird on Tuesday, Synced, that's with Liz Plank and I on Wednesday. Thursday, our experts. And Friday, we do Armchair Anonymous, where we talk to our listeners, which is so fun.
Is there any that you feel like more people should be listening to than are right now? Like you're like, oh, this one's a little bit undiscovered still. Listen to this
they're
one.
They're all so different. Yeah. You know, so Armchair Anonymous is super fun. I think it's more fun than if you haven't listened, like you wouldn't expect. But we give like a prompt every week and then we talk to 4 people who tell their stories on that prompt. And it can be like, tell us about the time you pooped your pants at the gym. Like that's one. And then, you know, one is like, tell us about a time you betrayed someone, you know, it's like it same runs time. The game. Yeah.
I betrayed really, myself when exactly. My poop came out.
Well, yeah, yeah. All one thing. We did a really fun one the other day about delivery drivers. They wrote in and told their stories and they were so bonkers. There's some really fun ones. So that's a very, very fun show.
Love it. Well, thank you so much, Monica.
Thank you for having me. This was awesome.
I am so glad that I got to sit down and talk with Monica. She was the absolute perfect first guest for our Life Lessons series. Let me know, first of all, if you like this series, but then second of all, any dream guest that you would love to see on it, I would love to hear. Also, if anything resonated with you in this episode, if there's anything that you think a friend or family member or coworker would find interesting, please send them a link to the episode. Sharing is the best way to support the podcast. It's how we can grow and get on incredible guests like Monica. All of that is 100% because of every single link that you've shared, every conversation that you've had about the podcast, and it is so, so appreciated. If someone shared a link to this episode with you and you are new to the podcast, welcome. I'm so glad that you're here. If you are not following the podcast, all you have to do is go to the main podcast page on whatever platform you like to listen on. That's the one that lists all of the Liz Moody podcast episodes. And you'll see the word follow under the logo on Spotify. And then there's a little follow with a plus sign button on the top right of that same page on Apple Podcasts. There was also a recent Apple update that changed things up a little bit. So if you follow the podcast there, even if you've been following it forever, please go to that little button in the top right,
of the page that lists all of the episodes of the show and click turn on automatic downloads so the pod keeps showing up in your feed. That way you will not miss out on any new episodes. They'll appear right in your feed every single Wednesday and every other Monday. And you definitely do not want to miss out. We've got some great ones coming up, including an episode that will completely transform your notion of productivity and another that will help solve any friendship problems and make sure we can all make and have the friends that we so, so deserve. Okay, I love you, and I will see you on Wednesday for the next episode of the Liz Moody Podcast.
There is so much incredible science behind red light therapy. There's research going all the way back to 1903 that won a Danish physician a Nobel Prize for showing that exposure to concentrated red light accelerated physical healing. And research from NASA has shown that it boosts the production of growth factor proteins and collagen, among many other incredible things. I am obsessed with red light therapy. It is so science supported, and I've personally seen huge, huge benefits. I use Bond Charge's Max Red Light Therapy device, which is a red light panel, so I'm not limiting its benefits to my face. I feel like the masks are so popular right now, but I would like to expose my entire body to the red light. That way, it helps with not only my skin, my collagen production, but also increasing energy, decreasing pain, repairing cellular damage, improving mental health and cognitive function, and so much more. You are not spending that much more money to get a panel versus a mask, but you get a much more versatile device with way more powerful effects. Bond Charge's Max Red Light Therapy device gives you professional-grade equipment straight at your home for the best price that I have seen anywhere. You can stand your Max panel on the floor on any flat surface, or you can hang it on the back of a door. It is really lightweight, and it is so easily stored away in the closet when you are done using it for the day. You only need 10 to 20 minutes, so Zach and I actually meditate in front of it naked, but there's lots of ways that you can habit stack it into your routine, so you do whatever sounds good to you. Check out Bond Charge's Max Red Light Therapy device now on bondcharge.com and use my exclusive promo code LizMoody at checkout. Bond Charge products are all HSA, FSA eligible, giving you tax-free savings of up to 40%. And for a limited time on top of that, my listeners will get 15% off when you order from bondcharge.com and use my exclusive promo code LizMoody at checkout. That is BONCHARGE.com. You will also get free shipping and a 12-month warranty. Go now to get this exclusive offer. That is bondcharge.com with promo code LizMoody to get 15% off.